State agencies no longer need a Department of Environmental Conservation permit to use herbicides and pesticides on state property and rights of way. That's unless it's sprayed from an aircraft or directly into the water. Matt Lichtenstein has more.
Until now, the Alaska Railroad, the Department of Transportation, and other state agencies had to get a DEC permit if they planned to treat their property, like roads or other rights of way, with herbicides or pesticides. The permit process meant they had to provide a detailed plan that went out for public review, comment, sometimes public hearings as well. Other state and federal agencies could also weigh in before the DEC decided whether to issue a permit, and that decision could be appealed. Permits are still required for spraying directly on water or by aircraft. The DEC says that's because the increased risk of harm to public health and the environment warrants closer review. However, the agency has eliminated that public and government review process for land-based pesticide use. Pamela Miller, director of the group Alaska Community Action on Toxics, calls that decision a serious breach of the public's trust.
Many of our roadways and certainly the rail belt are located in close proximity to drinking water sources, places where people fish, gather greens and berries, and to simply remove public notification and the right of the public to participate in decisions about these herbicides and pesticides is I think, a very serious assault on our democracy.
Miller points out that if the DOT, for example, decided to spray herbicides on land along the roadways in Southeast, they could do so without public review and comment, regardless of potential runoff into drinking water sources, salmon streams, or other particularly sensitive areas. That's not just a hypothetical situation. In a letter supporting the proposed regulation changes last summer, DOT Special Programs Manager Dan Breeden wrote that the agency had a direct interest because they intended to, quote, apply herbicides in our rights-of-way, airports, and at some facilities, unquote. While the agencies will no longer need a permit to use herbicides, the DEC says they will still have to publish public notices in a newspaper 30 days before the chemicals are applied. Bob Blankenberg is the DEC's Solid Waste and Pesticides Program Manager.
They do have to do public notice that they're doing this so people are aware of what their plans are and, can choose to avoid the area, or what have you. They also have to notify DEC so we have the opportunity to inspect the application if we decide we need to.
Blankenberg says the permitting process was a problem for state agencies dealing with what he calls time-sensitive pest management issues.
Such as invasive weeds along right-of-ways and in a lot of cases the inability to treat those promptly results in the weeds spreading and creating a greater problem.
In its written response to public comments on the issue, the DEC emphasized the federal government had extensive review, registration, and labeling requirements for pesticides and maintained that the Environmental Protection Agency's analysis of each product was, quote, sufficient to protect human health and the environment from unreasonable adverse effects, unquote. So instead of a permit, the new state regulations call for an integrated pest management plan that must be followed before pesticide and herbicide applications can occur on state-owned lands. According to Blankenberg, that requires agencies evaluate the extent of the problem and how it should be addressed. Anchorage Representative Les Guerra was among those who submitted comments opposing the changes. He calls the integrated pest management plan requirement meaningful.
You can still spray pesticides along a fishing stream, and according to DEC, that's okay without any public comment at all. You can still spray in an area where DEC just might know. It might be a vein that leads to somebody's water well. DEC won't know.
Guerra says his office is considering legislation on the issue. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Legislation proposing sea otter bounties will get its first hearing next week. It's already drawing opposition from environmental groups and the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Agency. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the story.
Fishermen harvesting Dungeness crab, geoduck clams, and some other ocean floor species have been coming up empty in recent years. The reason is the rapid expansion of the sea otter population. The marine mammals mostly eat clams, but as they bring their voracious appetites into new areas, they clear out many of the shellfish sought by commercial subsistence and personal use divers and fishermen.
So what we're trying to do is come up with some assistance for the folks in the area that want to go out and harvest them to afford to be able to do so.
Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman represents Cake, Prince of Wales Island, and other coastal southeast communities where otters have moved in. He's authored a bill that would give Alaska Natives, the only people who can legally hunt marine mammals, a $100 reward for each pelt they take.
You've got your costs of your fuel and other items you need. Also, there's tanning cost issues, and we're just trying to assist in the harvest.
Otters were once widespread along the West Coast, from California out to the Aleutians. Russian and American hunters virtually wiped them out, except for a few remote areas. They were reintroduced to Southeast about 50 years ago. Recent studies say their numbers are growing by as much as 12% a year in some places. Federal legislation protects otters, only allowing Alaska Natives to harvest them for traditional purposes. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service spokesman Bruce Woods says states can't impose bounties.
The Marine Mammal Protection Act prohibits any state from enforcing a law that affects the take of a marine mammal without first soliciting and receiving management authority for that species from the Secretary of the Interior.
The agency is working with native hunters and craftspeople to better define the legal use of pelts. That could increase the overall harvest. Opposition to the bill is growing among some of the same organizations that campaigned against wolf control. They say otter population growth is a good thing.
They're a keystone species.
Tina Brown is president of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. She points out that otters eat sea urchins, which eat kelp. That allows coastal Southeast to return to more of its natural balance.
When you have the kelp forest, you have nurseries for finfish. And it's thought that the kelp forest can increase herring populations, salmon populations. Another benefit is they help reduce CO2 emissions and slow ocean acidification.
And what about the hunters? Tlingit Haida Central Council Economic Development Director Carrie Sykes has been working on the issue. She says tribal members have mixed feelings.
Some people think that it would be a good idea and that it could help offset the costs of the hunting and tanning. Others are worried about what the perception will be from, you know, different organizations like Defenders of the Wildlife, and we're not really sure how it would work.
She says local tribes have more influence on the issue than the regional central council. Stedman, the Senate bill's author, says it should be considered a first draft. He expects changes as it's considered by the legislature. He also expects organized opposition.
And I recognize that there's a lot of citizens outside of Southeast Alaska that might just think this is a ghastly thing to do. But I can assure you we're better prepared to take care of our own backyard than people in San Francisco and Florida are.
Stedman's legislation comes before the Senate Resources Committee on March 13th. The House version, introduced by Anchorage Republican Representative Cherise Millett, is not yet scheduled. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
And you can find out more about the sea otter issue through links posted with this story on our website at ktoo.org.